We developed a complex and highly satisfying ritual for Saturday mornings that lasted until my first marriage 7 years later, which included a good half mile's walk up to the library and the bakery, a fancy breakfast of cold cereal, all the cartoons except Mighty Mouse, which I girl-cotted because of its incredible violence, and reams of conversation about everything under the sun. What did I have to share? Not much besides my presence, and my love, and a ton of opinions. But that was all that my brothers ever hoped for from me. They have always assured me that for a sister, I was a pretty good parent. The key to that was that I loved them and accepted them, although that did not stop me from bending their little minds when I felt it appropriate. I believe in training small children to see what appropriate behavior is, what manners are, where to use these behaviors and why. As far as their enthusiasms, hopes and dreams, I try to be supportive if possible. We can almost always find a point of support. The appropriate teach, learning device of parent to child is the open-hearted beingness of the parent and the total acceptance of the beingness of the child. This will encompass whatever material the child entity has brought into the life experience in this plane. 55 Although the very concept of discipline is a sore sub for many involved in parenting, I believe discipline, a healthy amount of rule-making and rule-enforcement, has its place in the appropriate ways we work to teach children. I see children going out of control in public places and it is never a comfortable experience. And there is simply no need for it, if the parents have established and enforced rules about appropriate behavior. In my own, 327, Chapter 10, Societal Issues Life, I have held jobs, as school librarian and as teacher of kindergarten students, where I was expected to enforce discipline, and I never had a problem with that. I was always very clear with children about what I needed to feel comfortable. If they did not give that to me, I informed them that they were making me nervous. My students did not want to make their beloved teacher nervous. I never raised my voice. When faced with a misbehaving child's tantrum, I would move the rest of the class to another room, leaving the screaming child kicking away in lonely fury, and begin an interesting activity. The child would come about soon. The concept of appropriate behavior is a very simple, logical one. Its assumption is that at home it is relatively all right to misbehave, at least to fail to mind one's table manners to an extent, or to complain or argue, but out in public it is necessary to behave oneself. This takes a little doing, in that when a child who hears this goes out in public, he will almost always try to test the boundaries of appropriate behavior. My brother, Tommy, certainly did. He had two rebellious moments. The first was at a restaurant, where he began throwing food. We got up, paid our bill, and went home, immediately. We left our meal, we did not eat more when we got home. And Tommy heard a calm and quiet repetition from me about appropriate behavior when in public. At a slightly older age, we went together to a movie to which Tommy had asked me to take him. He wanted popcorn, and I had no money for it. He began to protest quite vocally. We went home immediately, no movie, no attempt to get our money back, we simply went home. I was, in my way, ruthless. Ming the merciless, I never raised my voice, I never tried to push my point, but when the behavior from my brothers was not as I felt it needed to be, we went right home. While both of my brothers manipulated and even stole from my parents during their wayward youths, as far as I know, they both went through their boyhoods being very honest with their sister, knowing I was on their side, and also knowing where my boundaries were with them, what I could accept and what I could not. I think this made them feel safe with me in a way that my parents' permissiveness never did. They knew I loved them and went way out of my way for them. This made a difference to them. I think children are very fair. They know when we are really trying. Being a disciplinarian is never easy, and doing it with gentleness is even harder, but I truly feel it is worth it to both parent and child to establish rules of appropriate behavior and stick to them. We need to be able to misbehave, and part of any private home life is having that safe place to do so. We do not need to misbehave in public as well. In no way is this essential to any child's growth. Discipline is easy to. 328. Chapter 10, societal issues establish and maintain in dire proportion to the time we are able to spend with our children. If we are giving them plenty of attention, we can also nip bad habits in the bud, as we go. Helping the child to grasp standards of public behavior and manners is good for the child and even better for the emerging adult who must make her way in society. People don't usually get to know us at first, they get to know our manners, our courtesy, how we present ourselves. As we raise our children, we are helping them set those ways of presenting the self that are considered positive and pleasant by our society. It is an outer teaching, a shallow and surface teaching, this passing on of manners, etiquette and how things are done, but how grateful we are for the information when we need it. I will never forget my first evening at boarding school, knowing no one, and finding that all the others present were using European manners, fork in the left hand and so forth. How I blessed my mother for training me to be able to eat that way, to know which fork to use, how to serve and clear away for my elders in the right manner, all that material I had thought so dry when learning it at home. Those of RAS see discipline as a help in the child's learning the biases of service to others. The compassion of parent to child may well be tempered by the understanding that the child entity shall learn the biases of service to others or service to self from the parental other self. This is the reason that some discipline is appropriate in the teach/learning. 56 As a balance to this discipline we offer our children, we need to find ways to support our children's choices when we can. It is well to realize that even a small entity is an honored seeker of truth, one who has traveled as many trails as has any and who seeks within this incarnation to move with you in your seeking and to learn from you. Thus, to observe, support and appreciate the free will choices that such an entity makes is most important while balancing this appreciation of free will with your own guidance given in a fashion that respects the entity rather than confining without explanation. 57 What kids do the very best is ask questions. We can find all sorts of ways to give our best advice to children. There is the responsibility of being the friend and protector of those entities which may issue from the physical sexual reproduavalivites of this relationship, in such a way that the self is offered to the so-called children in service in ways which the young entity may understand. These ways include the basic orientation of service to others, there, 329, Chapter 10, Societal Issues Familiarizing of the Children with the Concept of the Creator, and their relationship to the Creator, the family remembrance of this relationship and, in general, the best guidance each in the relationship may possibly offer to these young ones, in whatever they may encounter, as they progress in the illusion. 58 What constitutes good advice? We have deep opinions on what good advice is, we have great stores of it to share, and when we come into contact with kids, we can feel that store flowing forth. We all have our stories to tell, and children are the best and most rapt audience in the world. Certainly, we need to be talking with them about being of service to others, about sharing and being good to each other. We can find wonderful stories to read to our children that bring up all these points, and help us discuss the best like sharing and giving. It is a tremendous help if our own life involves sharing and giving also, so that we can talk about these ideals as real and present within our lives as well as theirs. Children spot insincerity with great quickness. First find ways to be generous in our own lives, then talk about sharing to our children. We can encourage them to look on the bright side, to hold on to their dreams, to believe in ideals. For the most part, we relate to our children in one long question and answer session that is called childhood by the adult who finally outgrows the birth family, and we never get it all said. But we can certainly try. Kids love to talk, to play with words, to joke and wonder. Just hang out with them and let them guide the conversation, and we will find every opportunity to share all our best ideas with them. Perhaps the single greatest gift we can give them as spiritual beings is a sense of the divine. Children learn how beautiful nature is as we take them on picnics and out into parks, creeks, lakes and ocean. They learn how stunning the storm and the dawning are, how infinitely dark the night, how vast the stars. But without a way to worship, they are kept from many opportunities for mystic sight and fuller expression of their own spiritual impulses. Consequently, the single greatest gift to give children may well be the gift of our own spiritual price. Most people have not formed a daily spiritual price, but it is my feeling that daily home worship of some sort, even if it is only prayers at mealtimes and at night when the child goes to bed, is a tremendously important element of a safe and secure home for a child. Better still, let the daily worship be something we ourselves find time to do, and our child will grow up feeling that it is a normal and loving part of a day. Those of you who say, 330, Chapter 10, Societal Issues in Relation to the Children, we would suggest very strongly that if the parents do not engage in traditional church going, it is well if there be an altar or holy place, small as it may be, within the dwelling or close to the dwelling that may be dry from the weather and accessible in all temperatures so that one may go there and meditate each day. When children see how seriously the parents desire to know the truth, when they see daylines and discipline in seeking, they will, by osmosis and doing like the parents, imitate and grow to feel that place within themselves that hungers for heavenly food. 59 We would urge each parent to have a daily worship and to feel very strongly and passionately about it, for this is the way your children learn what life is like within this illusion. You are their teacher, each parent, and you hopefully will desire to give passion and love and a sense of peace that you feel within your heart to those children that are yours to teach and rear and tend. 60. Abortion is an issue that is ever before our minds today, as religious believers pit themselves against those who believe in the right of women to control their bodies. Feelings on both sides run very deep. However, beyond the gruesome details of the piures of aborted fetuses which rabid religionists wave and the destroyed bodies of doers and other healthcare workers shot and bombed by these same religionists for helping with abortions, there is the issue itself. When, if ever, is abortion right? Is there, spiritually speaking, ever a right abortion? I think it is a fair question, and not one with a simple answer. Certainly an abortion is justified in the case of a rape, or impregnation by a family member. Sometimes, abortion is spontaneous. It has been said often in metaphysical literature that many spiritual seekers came into this life a pre-programmed not to have children, and if they do get pregnant, they will lose the fetus. This happened with me when I was 19 and got jilted at the altar. I lost a tiny scrap of life that I had nurtured within my womb for 2 months. I grieved long over that child, and still think of it, almost 40 years later. Those of you who say, now, there are guards put against childbirth for some. This is due to their having come to this plane for other reasons. These entities will not have children, but will not have the decision of abortion either. Ifan, 331, Chapter 10, Societal Issues entity which has come here only for a spiritual path conceives, the child is simply spontaneously aborted, as the body's consciousness already knows that the mission of this particular entity does not include the luxury of loving a child, but rather the entity must face the father that work to which he gives his love and labor is his child. 61 For most who become pregnant, however, there is no spontaneous abortion, and the woman must wrestle with the decision of whether to have the child. When there are no financial means to make a confinement readily possible, when the woman will have to take responsibility for the child on her own, she certainly has the right to ask herself if she feels capable of doing that. There is a lot to think about. When a woman decides to have an abortion, what she is doing is taking away one opportunity for that particular entity to enter incarnation. It is sometimes a way in which painful relationships are balanced, for it is certainly abuse to be aborted, yet that same entity may well have needed this balancing so that that which you call karma would be balanced. Each entity within each fetus comes into the body at a different time. The more consciously entities live, the more that they will feel the call of the soul that awaits them and the more they will put personality into their thinking about the child to come. 62 Those of you who suggest that choosing abortion may be a thoughtless choice. In essence and in depth, the living of the life is a responsibility that must be seen to be completely one's own. Only in this way can each entity experience itself as a living, imperishable, metaphysical being. You do realize, we are sure, that no souls are lost in the abortion. It is merely that there is a carelessness and lack of appreciation for the sanity and beauty of life itself in one thoughtless enough to engender such a child and then remove it. Many are those who skate upon the pond of life, as we have said before, and never ever find the magical kingdom beneath that thin crust in water consciousness. 63 Of all the questions that we get when we channel for new audiences, the question about abortions recurs only slightly less often than questions about ascension and mass landings. I am not of the opinion that there is just one answer for those who ask. People want to know if there is a baby soul there immediately when conception takes place, or just an opportunity for a soul to come in during birth. Apparently, sometimes there is, sometimes there is no soul in residence until late in the pregnancy. Those of Hatton say, 332, chapter 10, societal issues whether the abortion removes only physical matter or an entity can be known only through meditation upon the part of the mother. The mother will know if a soul wishes to be born and wishes it as mother. If such an entity cannot feel the presence of a soul, those morally against abortion are impure. If after careful meditation the presence of a spirit desiring the experience of an incarnation with this entity as mother is felt and then the entity removes that opportunity, this union is to some degree part of a reckoning. The relationship will then occur in the future and restitution made. Love will find its balance in time. 64 If you feel you must abort now, you may make a solemn promise to the soul who is waiting for you, that later in this life, or in another life, you will again attempt to have this relationship, and next time, make it a planned for and celebrated joining of souls. My own feeling about abortion is to avoid it. I do not think I could abort a child of my body. I would find an agency that would help me through the pregnancy, and offer the baby for adoption, or attempt at all costs to raise it myself, before I would abort a child. In no way am I trying to talk anyone into having an abortion. I have known mothers who felt they had to abort, and have understood and sympathized with their reasons, which have fallen neatly into two categories: extreme poverty and an abusive relationship with the father of the child that the mother greatly feared would transfer to the child. In both cases, my support was for my friend as she went through the abortion, and in both cases, that seems to have been the decision that was best able to be lived with later on. Before such a decision is made, however, I can only encourage the deepest searching of the heart. There will always be some feelings for the aborted child, in most people. It will likely be a continuing source of sadness. One comfort for those who feel they must abort is that the unborn soul itself does not die, just that opportunity to come into incarnation. There is no soul lost, if by lost one means unredeemed and not capable of being able to continue its evolutionary journey when that process you have called abortion occurs. However, in such an instance there is the removing of vitality from the physical vehicle, which within most of your culture's definitions would equal that you have called murder. However, we suggest that the spirit which may inhabit any physical vehicle is not lost or irretrievably blunted in its search for incarnational experience by the of the aborting. 65, 333, chapter 10, societal issues, drugs and addiction. Drug addiction seems to be a part of every society, from the most primitive to the most technologically advanced. We as human beings seem to be able to find an infinite number of ways to alter our consciousnesses with things we drink, eat, smoke or have injected into our systems. Excessive use of such substances seems to be an integral part of celebrating holidays and special occasions for many. I would be the last to condemn the more innocuous substances out of hand, for I enjoy a little, in moderation. On the other hand, having had alcoholics in my birth family, I know exactly how much chaos and distress over use of addictive substances causes in a family. Usually, though cigarette smoking is a nasty and mortal addiction, its excess does not break up families, nor do caffeinated substances like tea, coffee and cola. But the full range of other drugs can and will break up families and destroy people with a ravenous and impersonal hunger. In some cases, such as with hard drugs and street drugs, I would feel secure in advising us all never to pick up or try them even the first time. All the various forms of cocaine, all the party drugs, designer drugs and safe drugs with various names with exotic chemicals in them can be counted on to be too hot to handle by anyone. For alcohol and marijuana, however, I see appropriate usage as a matter of degree. Those of you who suggest the nature of addiction or vice can be seen to be that which takes a good thing and simply overdoes it. What drives entities to addiction very simply is the instinct that the body, the mind and the spirit have to seek comfort, enjoyment and peace. 66 The drug seeker is looking for ways to feel better. In this way, it can be clearly seen that drug usage is service to self in its polarity. C. Lewis said that there is no neutral ground in the universe. For the victim of substance abuse, there is no neutral ground between the self-serving negative path and the positive path of service to others, and the seeking of the higher self. It is one or the other. 67 For a person in pain, the service to self-asp is largely irrelevant, for it is felt that the drugs are needed to allay pain, and Jonathan Boyne says, testing highly and interested in everything, I received a scholarship, but dropped out, disillusioned by available sources of knowledge, experimented with LSD, had great insights and depression. It seemed clear that Earth was headed for disaster of all sorts, some of which I have seen from space in ships out of body, with no sane livelihood available. 334, Chapter 10, Societal Issues. Suicidal at 18 to 20, I was hospitalized 3 times for overdoses, wanting to return to a more sensible place. 68 Especially when we are alienated and unable to find satisfying work, Earth can seem far less than a sensible place. However, drugging the self to the point of overdose is a far cry from that thought of using a little pot or alcohol to enhance a celebration. So if we are trying to come to some conclusion about our own usage, we need to see where we are on that scale, from celebratory drugs to sociable drugs to drugs as a painkiller to drugs as an escape. The first two categories are pretty safe for most people, although if we are from a deprived gene pools, we must always watch any intake. The third category is not one we want to be in often, and the fourth category is never a good idea to choose. Drugs may seem like an escape, but they are a blind alley, often a fatal one to enter. We as a civilization seem to seek drugs and medicine a good deal, and I am certainly a participant in that. As of this date, I am taking 10 medications for which I need a prescription, and another 10 herbal and other preparations intended to work on one or another condition of my often poorly testing physical vehicle. Cortisone and other powerful drugs run through my body all the time, helping me mechanically to control various conditions that have not responded to diet and exercise. In addition, I drink a glass of wine probably once a week. I genuinely wish to function as fully as possible in consensus reality, and watch carefully the substances I take. But I cannot be holier than thou on this sub when I use the crutches that medicine and drugs represent to help blunt the edges of my own conditions and symptoms. Again, it is a matter of degree. I think this is true of any addiction. We can certainly also have addictions to work, or to avocations, for example. It is always a matter of appropriate degree. Several wanderers talk about this. The marriage lasted 6 years. I gave him all the love, devotion, and compassion I had to give. I gave the marriage my all, and it didn't work, of course. That began the walk on the road to kill. I began taking drugs, drinking, and an attitude that life is a sick joke. The drugs made me forget all the pain. Drugs numbed me. The stress alone nearly killed me. Drugs were all I had that made me feel better. 69 He relies very heavily on daily use of marijuana and beer to soothe his soul and to take the edge off whatever harshness exists between himself and the world. I think he does this in lieu of going inward and finding. 335, Chapter 10, Societal Issues Strength and Protion from Within, or if he does go inward, it is out of paranoia or to hide, not so much to go with the higher source. When confronted about his dependency, he shows no sign of ever giving it up. 70 I take medication myself, because I came to a point where I knew the burden of my life choices was overwhelming me and that if I was going to just keep walking I had to be able to cope with my tests one at a time. I have difficulty even identifying physically. I feel straddling worlds can be dangerous. I have to make a conscious effort to remember to eat, get enough sleep, that is, take care of the body. 71 I think that many people can accept taking medication for a period of time in order to help deal with a certain difficulty. When there is a chronic health situation, we tend to accept prescription drugs into our daily regimen. Under a doer's care, such uses of medicine seem to me to be relatively acceptable. In the second quote, however, the young man that 131 is talking about does have an iron problem. No amount of marijuana and beer can substitute for working on our problems. Pharaoh writes, I guess that for the most part my life has seemed quite a struggle. And alcohol and pot, not to mention antidepressants, have been with me for most of my last 20 years. I'm wondering, if I'm as spiritually evolved as I'd like to believe, if I should probably drop these bad habits one of these days. What do you think? 72 I believe I counseled him to keep the antidepressants but to think carefully about the extent of his other two substances, pot and beer. It is so easy to get into an excessive habit when all we really intended was to indulge in moderation. And moderation can be the difference between a very pleasant life and one rendered dysfunctional and unmanageable. I am not a Puritan, but I do encourage this concept of moderation. It is often the case that people come to consciousness-altering substance use as aspirants after knowledge, wisdom, light and realization. Perhaps some have had great insights thereby. My experience is limited to having taken LSD twice, in the early 80s, and finding no trips in consciousness taking place, just a feeling of great well-being, and an unusually ample supply of physical energy which enabled me completely to clear away all my office work that day. However, the after effects of this usage were so severe for me, physically, that I decided not to take LSD again, and I have not. Jim McCarty comments, 336, Chapter 10, Societal Issues Drugs, Sex, and Rock and Roll was the new religion of the day, in the late 60s. And I was dedicated to becoming one of its saints. I smoked a lot of marijuana and took a couple of trips on acid, on one of which I heard a voice in my brain say very clearly, "You don't have to be stoned to be here." 73 In this regard, as in so many others, Jim's wonderful combination of good, sound judgment and psychically accurate intuition and guidance are tremendously appreciated by me. The guidance he got, that we don't have to be stoned to achieve altered states of consciousness, is to my mind most important. I know, for instance, of several methods of altering consciousness that have nothing to do with drugs. Sustained exercise can bring on satiety, as can dancing and shamanic activity. Those of Oaxall note, nothing is clear in your illusion, nothing can ever be permanently clear. It is possible to place the mind within a different state of consciousness, because consciousness has little to do with the illusion. That is precisely what the Sufi who dances, the shaman who twirls, the runner who goes beyond his limits, or the entity which takes mind-altering drugs intends to do. It intends to move to a point of view which is less illusory and more full of that which all humankind seeks. Truth. 74 The dancing and exercising, to me, are far safer for the waking personality than taking drugs. I have known several friends who overdid the LSD trips back in the 1960s who had astounding experiences, which manifested in the memory as blazes of light that were flashbacks to the original light-filled experience. The problem with this is that the experience itself, forced onto the consciousness by the substance, was not something the body, mind or spirit were ready for, and consequently there was a continuing and chronic loss of power through the higher three centers and a corresponding lack of ability to seek the awareness that these experiences brought. It was like an energy leakage. In later life, the trips were only seen as destructive experiences, the flashbacks being times when they became unable to function. Perhaps this sort of difficulty can be cured, but it is not simple or easy to reclaim one's integrity and balance, or to feel again the reservoir of personal power that has been experiencing a slow leak for decades.